Thought for today. Do not diagnose. This is Dr. Herbert L. Byerly, Dean of the University of Healing in Campo, California. And our topic is do not diagnose. This is something that we have all considered many times in our life, diagnosing our case, what's wrong with us, what's bad with us. And of course, that's what comes to us, whatever we diagnose. Now, you may just have a headache, and you think you're having cancer, you have a brain tumor. Ha! Well, you deserve it. You have an arm that's stiff because you've been carrying a bunch of bricks around in it yesterday, like I did. And I was carrying bricks in my left arm here, about 8 deep, and one or two in my right hand. And my arm got, as I was carrying them. And then this morning, as I was getting up and so forth, I felt just fine. And then as I was moving my arm around, felt a little stiff. And I thought, oh, well, how about that now? What shall we interpret that to be? And I said, well, I think that's just an arm that is ready to relax a little more. So I said, relax, be at peace, you're wonderful. And then the pain was gone. Now, I could have said, that is part of the heart attack symptoms. Heart attack symptoms are when you have a pain here, and when you have pains here, and you feel a pain in your arm and stuff like that. My goodness sakes, every laborer, every man who labors, every woman who labors, carrying boxes around and doing work that they had not been conditioned for over a period of time, would have aches and pains in their arms and their back and their head and their nose and their eyes and their toes. They'd be having pain everywhere, but then they label it, say that pain is a heart attack, that pain is cancer, that pain is a tumor. Wow. Oh, and I don't even want to think of all the names that they could label the pain. They love it. We went into the emergency ward of the hospital in San Diego, and Ellen was talking to a young man who was sitting in a wheelchair, and he was just all in his fetal position, all crunched up there, hurting so bad. He hadn't eaten for 3 days, hadn't drunk for 3 days. His stomach was just terrible. And he says, I have... Ellen says, no. Ellen says, you're home perfect. But I... You're home perfect. She wouldn't let him say it. She wouldn't let him say it in her presence. Whatever he thought it was. He was in there because he was in an emergency situation. He had such stomach cramps and such pain. He couldn't eat and he couldn't do this. And of course they really rushed him through. He was sitting there from early morning until noon or whatever it was, until we came there 4 o'clock, something like that. And so in the conversation, Ellen says, well, we're taking this juice diet. It's supposed to cleanse out your body and take out all the toxins and stuff like that. It's quite a nice juice diet. We enjoy it. And he says, oh, she said, would you like to try some? He said, oh, I can't. Oh, don't try some. And so he tried it, and then he wanted the rest of the bottle. He said, oh, that's great. That's wonderful. And then he talked with us for a little while, and Ellen says, you're home perfect. And then he said, he took off his hospital blanket and threw it on his wheelchair and stood up, went over to the window, not rolled over the window, but walked over to the window and said, I'm checking out, I don't need to have any help. Now, maybe he came back 20 minutes later. Maybe he came back a day or two later, same symptoms. Maybe he never came back. Maybe he died. Maybe he lived. What does it matter? It only matters that he took the challenge and accepted the fact that he was whole and perfect, contrary to all of his self-diagnosis. Contrary to all of his self-diagnosis. We've got to get our bloated nothingness out of the way of the divine circuits. Emerson knew what he was talking about. Get your bloated nothingness out of the way of the divine circuits. You're going to tell the divine circuits how the case is. Now, you go to a doctor, and they can only go by your symptoms. And then they go by your symptoms, and they say, well, if those symptoms are true, and that indicates where you are, then you have this. And then the doctor gives you a bunch of tests, He says, well, you don't have that. Now, what do you have? Well, what other symptoms you got? Well, you know, and then he goes on and on. And then if you talk about sex, wow, then all of a sudden that's your case. You know, that's your case. If your sex hasn't been too good lately, then, you know, you're really, then they got the answer. But if you have been starving, if you have been stomach pains, if you have all sorts of interesting terms that they use, then they can figure out other stuff. But if you got a sexual problem, you know, that you haven't been having enough experiences, then that is what they label it as. You know, boom, they got the answer. And that may be the farthest thing in the world. I had a dear friend, Harry Wanley. I told you about him often. He was 88 years old, and his wife died. Miserable woman. She was 87 or 88 years old, and she died. And Harry was used to having sexual experiences every night. He's a very active boy. And so he buried her, and Arletha was a great lady. I knew her very well. And he was superintendent of schools in the Humboldt School District, and she was a kindergarten teacher in the same district all the time they were together. Well, they lived in Leisure World with my mom. Mom lived in Leisure World too. They didn't live together. They all had their own houses, you know. And so I was talking to Harry. He says, you know, Herb, he says, Arletha died a week ago now. And she says, I was looking out my front window, and I can see right into the other windows, and I noticed this lady next door, who I had always admired, and her husband had died about a month or two before. And so I went over to her last night, and I said, Pauline, what do you say we go out on a date? And Pauline said, sure, why not? So they went out on a date. And then he said, Pauline, I miss sex. She says, I do too. And so the two of them got together. And they said, well, now, it wouldn't be a good idea for us to get married, because I have my estate, and you have your estate, and your children are going to be waiting for your estate. My children are going to be waiting for my estate. We don't need each other's estate. We'll just live together and be a happy couple. And Harry says, suits me. So, you see, their remedy to their problem was quite simple. You say, well, there's nothing wrong with them. It could have been. If you are in the habit of certain experiences, and then you don't have them, you start going out looking around for things, you could get yourself into a lot of trouble, because you're unbridled. You no longer have a wife that keeps you in the straight and narrow. You no longer have situations that keep you properly organized. But you see, don't diagnose the situation. Harry was not a sex pervert. He was not something strange. He just had his normal experiences with his wife every night, and perhaps even more often than that, but he had his normal experiences, and that was important to him. And obviously it was important to Arletha too. She created him in her world, you know. So the two of them had a great experience. But the thing is, if you were going to diagnose that, and Harry says, oh, you know, I can't sleep at night, and I got this, and I got palpitations of the heart, and I got this and that. Doctors say, well, you know, you're 88 years old. You know, that's not unusual for you to have a few symptoms. Well, yeah. When did it start? Well, it started the day that Arletha died. Well, gee, you were mourning and so forth and grieving. Yeah, but it started that day, and you know, it just kept compounding, and every day it got worse, and I just... My body system was out of order because I wasn't doing things right. And the doctor says, well, seems like only one solution for you. Find another wife. Find another woman, you know. Now, see how easy that was? Now, the doctor didn't think of saying to him, Harry, maybe it's time that you learn a little bit of temperance for yourself. You learn a little bit of self-control. Sure, you've had it for 88 years or more or less. Sure, you've had experiences, but hey, you could learn a new program for yourself now. But the doctors don't say that. They just say, simplest thing, go find yourself another beautiful lady to have as a relation. And you see, we diagnose things in our life. We diagnose our problems, we diagnose our cases and our conditions, and every time we diagnose them, what do we come up with? we come up with some simple solution that solves it perfectly. Except it's not the answer. What is the answer for anything in our life?
I'm whole and perfect.
I'm glad you said that. I'm whole and perfect. Now, is it the truth?
Yes.
Well, what are these appearances, these illusions that I have of not having it be the truth? What am I going to do with them?
Not giving them
What's that?
Power.
Let them be.
Let them be and not give them any power. That's a new direction for me. That's a new direction. I've always given power to every little ache and pain I've had or every little illusion that came up in my mind, and it got bigger and bigger, and I'm glad I gave it attention, or else it might have never gotten bigger, you know. I might never realize what I was enjoying, you know. So whenever we feel anything, instantly we say, I'm whole and perfect. Whenever we feel pain, unhappiness, we feel irrationality in our being, we say, I'm whole and perfect. Now, people say, well, Herb, how can I come and talk to you as my practitioner if I don't tell you what my problem is? I say, oh, you can tell me what your problem is. I'll just cover my ears. I won't hear it. When you're done, I'll say, now what do you want to experience? You say, I want wholeness. I say, wow, let's go for it. Go for wholeness. But the thing is, the more you spread around your disease, you know, the more you spread your disease around, telling people you have it, the more people are contagious with you having that disease. And they see you having that disease. And they say, oh, she's got this and he's got that. And didn't you know? They told me they had it. And they're getting worse every day. You can see the whites of their eyes are fading into pink, you know. And you can see their complexion. I mean, Evan was saying this young man in the hospital, he was a black man, but he was very pale. How did she know he was pale underneath his very good tan, you know? How did you know? She sensed it. She sensed it because he gave that opinion. Moaning, groaning, unhappiness, you know. And we don't want to give out these signals. We want to give out signals that we're whole and perfect. If everybody is thinking we're whole and perfect, what's going to happen to us? We're going to radiate that wholeness and perfection. Although, we can pretend, and then pretend we're not listening, and not hearing it, and not experiencing it. It's quite interesting. Quite interesting. You know, I drove to Ray's house, my brother, to pick up the iris that he had for us. And as I drove up there, I drove up the long way. I didn't realize how really short way the short way was. But I drove up the long way. And then I thought, oh, this must be his street. Because that's the street where I came down to buy some Mexican food for them. And I drove up that street, and I drove up that street, and I drove up that street, and I never came to his place. And so then I turned left, which I should have turned right. I turned left, and then I went for a mile or so. Then I turned right, and then there I was, right back in the middle of Hemet again. And right by Coco's, you know. And so then I turned left again, and then I looked for the railroad station. And when I came to the railroad station, I said, there it is. It's further than the first street. The first street was Palm Street, and I should have taken State. So I drove on till I came to State, and then I turned left at State Street and went right to his house. Well, I could have said everybody else was wrong. I went up Palm Street, and I should have found it, and I should have looked. I went everywhere. I looked and looked and looked and looked and looked, and it wasn't there. Of course, that's the wrong street. But the thing is, just because it was the wrong street, that had nothing to do with it. I believed it was the right street. You understand? I believed it was the right street. And so therefore, I was looking on the wrong street for the right street for the wrong address on the right street. You know? And it just was not there. And I believed in me. I believed it. I felt insecure because I didn't see the signs that I was used to seeing as I went along. But it's a rather rural community, and it has a lot of stop signs at every other corner. Sign, not lights, you know. And so they were all the same. I thought, surely it must be the right street. Well, when I got on the right street, I recognized everything right away. There was this little Mexican restaurant right on the corner, like I thought. But they have a Mexican restaurant on every corner in Hammett. So that was really no guide. But the old railroad station was right there, and it was made into a restaurant. And that was where I should have turned. But I turned one stoplight too soon. Now, we do that with our treatment for ourselves. We turn one stoplight too soon, and then we see all of the confusion. We say, see, I'm sick, see, I've got problems, see. Whereas if we had stopped and said, which is the road that leads to San Jacinto? They would say, oh, up State Street, one more stoplight up there. And zip, I'd been right there. And I've gone there often enough, but I've gone there so often that I felt self-confident. And I said, that looks like the right street, and I turned, because they looked very similar, but it wasn't. And you see, we have symptoms. Symptoms say that we have a cold, or we have bronchitis, or we have a hack, or we have phlebitis, you know, or we have, you name it, and we got it. And phlebitis, that's where you have phlegm in your throat, and you spat it out, phlebitis. But you know what that is. You've all had that system. And you name it, and you claim it, and then you take pills for it. Whereas the best thing in the world to do, just be cut off your head and put a new one on, you know. But that hasn't been scientifically proven to be effective yet. So we'll wait on that. But the point is, cut off your head. As Ilse would often say, I laughed my head off. So take all those attitudes that are natural in our head because society feels that they're natural and release them. And put inside of your head, I'm whole and perfect, I'm fantastic, I'm glorious, I'm free, I'm perfect, I'm glorious. Don't diagnose yourself. If you diagnose yourself, you're going to go to the doctor will find out that you're perfect. And then he'll say, but as long as we got you here, let's make a few bucks off of you. We're going to send you in for this test and for that test and the other test, and your insurance and whatever is covering that. And if not, then you'll cover it. And so we make a few more bucks, and so we're going to check you out. And that's okay. They'll check you out, and they'll find that you also are perfect, and you also have no problems. And then they'll say, well, let's see. Wouldn't hurt to have you spend a little more money on medicine, so we'll recommend that we double your dose. And it's like doubling your pleasure with double mint gum, you know. And they have these twins always chewing two sticks of gum. But I'm saying this only from one point of view. We teach spiritual treatment here. We teach spiritual healing here. We don't teach diagnosis. We say, go to your doctor for a diagnosis. Here we speak our word. I'm whole and perfect. I'm whole and perfect. I'm whole and perfect. Whole and perfect. If you feel you have to go to the doctor, go ahead. But here, you only speak your word, I'm whole and perfect. And you don't do any diagnosis here. If you do diagnosis here, then you're obviating the entire treatment work that we're saying, I'm whole and perfect. You cannot do that. But why are you going to the doctor? Well, you just don't feel so good. But don't diagnose it. If you diagnose what you don't feel good about, you'll create yourself having it. Just say, I'm whole and perfect, and then go to the doctor if you wish. But don't diagnose it. Now, you say to me, Herb, I don't feel good. I say, well, how much don't you feel good? Is it just a not-so-feeling-good feeling or a bad feeling good? Well, it's a bad not feeling good. Okay, then you go and have the doctor check you out. Don't diagnose it. But that's the way it is. We don't teach diagnosis here. Now, some metaphysical books have metaphysical diagnosis of disease, of cold is confusion and this is that and that. Don't read it. Don't read it. And another thing, dreams. They have books on dreams to tell you what dreams mean. Don't read it. Come to your own conclusion about what dreams mean. Listen to your own heart about what dreams mean to you is totally different from what they mean to somebody else. Somebody else might be a mass murderer, and their dreams are based upon an entirely different set of circumstances than yours. And you never murdered anybody. You don't even know what a mass murderer feels like, or thinks like, or acts like, or cares like. And you never want to. Just be yourself and have fun. And follow your heart. Follow your heart. And in your dreams, hey, dreams are fun. Dreams have lots of stories to tell, and sometimes have none to tell. But if you have a dream and you want to follow it, then follow it and enjoy it. But don't read books on it. Because the minute you read a book on it, you're reading somebody else's interpretation of what dreams mean. And then you get somebody else's book, and you got another set. If you got eight books, you got eight sets of interpretations based upon the person who's writing the book and what they may have read. And if they all go to the same class, taking the same instructor, and come away and write a book, they'd all virtually write the same type of attitude toward dreams. Follow me? Mm-hmm. Now, another little thing, as long as we're talking about it. Colors. What do colors mean? Oh, blue means healing, and green means healing, and yellow means healing, and red means terrible things. It means violence. It means
anger,
and all that good stuff. Well, why? Why? I like red.
Yeah, red,
I think red is quite lovely. And red rose, there
red
you go.
Red car.
And red cars. I think red has a lot of nice things about it. And Dodie, you got a red Jeep.
Yeah.
Yeah, with a black top. Yeah, I looked inside your little Javi, and she's got her beautiful dresses laying over the seat so the sun won't fade the seat. Fades the dresses, but it won't fade the seat. You know. And, what are we doing? Well, we're taking somebody else's interpretation of red. Now, when you have a violently obsessed person, then sometimes red can be aggressive to him, but only because you think it's aggressive. Now, Ellen was walking in the field with a young lady who was wearing a red skirt, and a bull came running up. Or was it you, Sylvia?
You.
Me. Oh. I thought it sounded familiar. The bull was going to chase after this woman. And I said, hey, cool it. The bull will only chase after red if you think they chased after red. Just pretend you're not even here. Just walk with me as though you're invisible.
Yeah.
And she was invisible. And the bull didn't even pay any attention to us. Went the other way. But you see, if you believe it, you create it and you attract it. And then you enjoy it.
Yeah.
So, get with it, kids. Life is too wonderful not to do it right.
Mm-hmm.
This is our thought for today. And my closing statement is, do not diagnose any problems, any difficult circumstances, anything in your life. Live it, enjoy it, be yourself, and have fun. I love you, I love you, I love you.
Thank you.